Hello and welcome to day two of the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Trevor Simpson, Associate Editor at Hotel News Now, and I'm with Matt Marquis, CEO of Pacifica Hotels. Matt, how are you?
It's good to be here. Love Hunter.
Glad to have you. So to start off with, what are some takeaways you have from Hunter so far?
You know, it's a great conference. I love the vibe of the conference. It's very kind of easygoing. You know, yeah. It's Southern, you know,
right.
it's a great vibe. And I think it's a great way to kind of casually come to a conference. And I don't want to make that sound like it's a negative.
Right.
I think it's a huge positive. You can come out here, you know, some guys are dressed up, some ladies are dressed up, other people are like me, a little more fashion casual.
Yeah.
And I think that you know, the speakers are great. I just finished a panel, hotel owners and brands, that we had a great discussion. And what I love about participating and being involved in these conferences is that you come away with nuggets of things that you learned. My good buddy was on the panel with me, Dupree Scoville from Woodbine, and at the end he gave away our secret sauce, and I was like, Dupree, come on, you're telling everyone how we make money, you know, and now everyone's gonna do what we're doing. But I think that's what I love about our industry, and the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference is really, you know, a great example of the collaborative effort of our principals and our brands and our vendors all coming together and trying to figure out, you know, what makes sense, how do we work together, how do we help each other, what are some best practices we're seeing in the industry, where are trends going in the industry. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, coming to these conferences, I know, you know, my own father didn't like to go to conferences. He thought they were kind of a waste of time. Mm-hmm. And I have the complete opposite look. I think it's really where you develop these relationships. And that came up in our panel. The importance of relationships between brands and owners and vendors and owners and, our teams and principals. Yeah. You know, relationships in business are everything. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that you keep those relationships intact, that you understand what's going on with people and what they're doing in their respective companies and in the industry. And then hearing, it was funny because, everyone's so hot on, the premium economy extended
right.
stay. And we're about ready to take advantage of an opportunity. And then, you know, you come here and it's like, oh, well, man, it sounds like there's a lot of people doing this right now.
Mm-hmm.
And again, are you on point with the trend, or are you a little late to the game, or, you know, are you maybe early?
Yeah.
So I think that's it's a great thing to do at these conferences, is really take a barometer check of the industry.
Sure. You talked about the casual feel, the casual attire. Do you want to describe to our podcast audience the sneakers that you have on?
This is, I think, becoming my identity here in our industry, which I actually love, because I just being another hotel owner is nothing interesting. I think that, I've always been into sneakers. I played basketball as a kid from when I was like 5 years old. I was point guard. I'm a huge NBA fan. Our family and our company actually was the original franchisee with the Battistone family.
Oh, wow.
of the New Orleans Jazz, and then
yeah.
we moved them to Utah, and unfortunately
okay.
we didn't hold them long term like the Miller family did and made $1 billion or more than $1 billion. So we sold too cheap, but again, it was a different world back then. So for me, sneakers are really a reminder of my youth, of good things I learned through competition. You know, there's a lot that encapsulates, you know, the sneaker world.
Yeah.
High fashion, you know. We own the Kimpton in Portland, as we
right.
talked about before we started this.
Mm-hmm.
And in that particular hotel is a suite, and all the furniture is oversized.
Yeah.
And it's because that's where Michael Jordan used to stay when
Whoa.
He would come and play the Blazers. And they stayed there at the Kimpton. And Michael Jordan had this suite, and he had to have everything oversized so it was comfortable. Well, my vision is at some point when the Portland market starts, you know, coming back around, and
right.
we do our renovation of that hotel, that we do something sneaker-centric, whether it's a collab
yeah.
with Jordan Brand or Nike or something like that. But it just makes a lot of sense to do something fun like that. And that's what this, you know, life's about, trying to figure out how to, you know, be productive and have a good life, but also how are we having fun?
Yeah. I'm sure you wish you were in Portland tonight. I know you're a big Clippers guy, and they're in town. But
they've been tearing my heart out lately.
Yeah, I've seen. We will get to that in a little bit. Back to hotels.
Yeah.
What's new with Pacifica?
You know, we're really excited where we are. Coming out of the pandemic, I mean, you know, I think everyone has a little PTSD.
Yeah.
And everyone's a little cautious. Everyone wants to take things a little slower, which I think is really good for our industry. The unpredictability in the marketplace, you know, we talked about interest rates, you know, being kind of at the same level they were before the Great Recession,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, I think we still use that as the reason why we're not doing transactions, why we're not developing, why we're not doing more acquisitions.
Yeah.
But, you know, part of that is the pricing hasn't changed and the cost of development has gone up dramatically. So I think there's still some adjustments in the market to be made if this is going to be our new norm of a mm-hmm. little bit higher interest rates. We're going to have to price that in, and it's going to take a little bit of time. And it'll be interesting to see how much pain we go through if there is a little bit of a real estate recession in general. And we start seeing banks do what banks do, whether they do extend and pretend, which has really been a flawless strategy for banks, I think.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a good sponsor, you do the extend and pretend, and over time, everyone does fine, and the relationship stays intact, and your business stays intact, and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see. Also, you know, do we have smart money sitting? I mean, we've been hearing about it for 10 years now. There's tons of money out on the sidelines. Is it smart money? Is it not so smart money? And that could make a difference of what happens when things start to become, you know, start to loosen up as far as transactions go.
Sure. So you guys are obviously California based. Most of your properties are in California. What are some markets that you're looking to go into?
Yeah, Pacifica's history is the Pacific.
Yeah.
You know, we have probably one of the, I think, the most curated and diverse coastal California portfolios stretching from San Diego up to San Francisco. And I think that, you know, it's been something we've been very successful at and have made our investors and ourselves a lot of money. But it's also California, and California
yeah.
becomes more and more difficult to operate a business in and to, you know, manage employees, and that becomes more challenging. And so I think more and more we're looking to diversify. We still are always going to have our core California assets. But as we look at new opportunities, we are open to going into other major markets around the nation.
Yeah.
We've looked here in Atlanta, we've looked in Nashville, we've looked in Austin, we've looked in South Beach and Miami and, you know, the Keys and all kinds of places, you know, Scottsdale. Even, you know, places like Boise, you know, our two latest acquisitions are in Seattle and Portland.
Yeah.
And kind of a contrarian play.
Mm-hmm.
But we feel like there's opportunity in a lot of different markets for what we do, both from the design standpoint, from the operating standpoint, from the positioning standpoint.
So you mentioned San Francisco. What's your read right now on the San Francisco market? You guys have one property there, I believe?
Yeah, we manage for a friend of ours, a public REIT, and it's a great asset. San Francisco, like downtown L.A., and again, L.A. is a little different because, and San Francisco has submarkets also,
right.
But L.A., the submarkets seem to be touching each other a lot closer.
Yeah.
You can go a mile and a half and be in a different submarket in L.A. and your hotel's doing fine. But if you're in downtown, kind of by that crypto center L.A. Live area where we have our Wayfair, it's still really tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've all seen the food and beverage headlines with, you know, certain hotels down there where they, you know, there were some strategic things done there. But food and beverage is tough in California between all the different labor laws, the increased costs, and it just makes for tough times. And downtown LA, the businesses are still not quite back.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't living there as much as they were. It was hot in 18 and 19. It was kind of the renaissance of downtown.
Yeah.
We have the Olympics coming. We have the World
Sure.
Cup coming. So we're hoping that those are good tailwinds for us to kind of, you know, get some inertia and see that market recover. Portland has recently made some changes with some of their laws with regard to drug use and enforcement of things. Seattle, same thing. And so we're hoping that these markets that were really impacted during the pandemic with different, you know, whatever the issues were, and again, some of them were very public and on the news 24/7.
Absolutely.
And I think that's caused a bit of a black eye in some of these markets that have traditionally been really good markets.
Right.
And you know, again, the leaders of those cities and counties really need to focus on what are we doing to bring business back to our cities.
Gotcha. Speaking of tailwinds, there's been a shift toward experiential travel recently. Heard a lot about that first 2 days of Hunter. How has that been advantageous for your portfolio of boutique properties?
It's interesting. We have quite a few boutique hotels that could be almost qualified as experiential. Mm-hmm. And so to me, experiential's been out there a while. A good friend of mine does Auto Camp, Neil. And, you know, very experiential with the Airstream trailers and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I think it's fantastic. I mean, where I used to live in Santa Barbara, they have El Capitan. You know, they have these luxury tents that got wiped out during one of the storms here recently. And I think they're being rebuilt. But, you know, I think that's a travel experience that is going to stick around.
Yeah.
Now, do we need as many operators and new concepts? We could say that about almost everything in our industry right now. That creativity has gone through the roof, which is absolutely awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be some attrition of brands and companies that do these things that everyone is trying to get into right now. Extended stay, same thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of inertia going into some of these different lanes that are in hospitality. Experiential travel is really interesting, but it's also really hard to operate. It's really hard to keep your margins. You know, as there becomes more supply in experiential travel, will you be able to still charge that premium, or will, you know, there be an oversupply like everything else in economics?
Yeah. So. How has group travel been for your properties last year and so far this year?
We're starting to see group travel coming back, and that's good.
Yeah.
You know, that's that kind of base business that can really help stabilize your hotels for when you do have citywides or other things that come in. You can really get those premium rates with the last, you know, 15-20% of your inventory. And again, group usually comes with a good food and beverage component, which helps your food and beverage profitability at each asset. So I think one of the things we're always doing is looking at some of our hotels that are in bigger group markets and saying, what can we do to enhance the amenities, the fungibility of this asset to where it's more suited for groups. And again, some groups are looking for, going back to the experiential, a creative space where they can, you know, do brainstorming, or they can have, you know, an idea lab going on. And so, like, you know, in the Wayfair DTLA, we have a club down in the basement. And right now, you know, operating a open to the public club is not going to work in LA unless you have a massive following or a big draw or something like that. So we actually have Fork and Film in that over 4 days of like the long weekend.
Yeah.
And that's been a tremendous boon to us as far as profitability and stabilizing our food and beverage profitability and our staffing and all those kind of things. And that allows us then to say, okay, now how else can we use this space when they are not using it?
Right.
And some of that is like, okay, we can do creative space. We can, you know, for less than you would pay for a decent table in Vegas at a nightclub, you can rent the whole Lily Rose, you know, bar and lounge for a private event.
Yeah.
I mean, and so you think about the value proposition that you can have in some of these assets right now that are in these markets that are impacted. There are owners that are willing to work with, you know, customers, clients, groups, and saying, hey, we may not have the big ballroom for you, but we can get, you know, 50 of your people down here for a creative meeting, or 30 of your people, and, you know, it's a totally different setting. And I've done meetings like in Boston in one that was a similar thing where it was a club that kind of turned back into a meeting room.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. It did kind of, you know, help inspire you to different type of thinking when you're in that kind of a room or space.
Right. So I promised that we would come back to the Clippers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm also a big basketball fan. My team is the New York Knicks, 4 seed in the East. Clippers are the 4 seed in the West. How are you feeling about the Clippers right now?
Man, I've been a longtime Clippers fan, over 20 years, and I started off just as a basketball fan, but I could get Clipper tickets, and and then I got sucked into the saga back in the Donald Sterling days, and what a horrible owner he was at the time, and then the saving grace of Mr. Ballmer and the beautiful arena that he's opening next year that we'll be also season ticket holders in, but. I think we have as much talent as anyone in the league right now.
I agree.
We don't have the same chemistry. And I think in some ways the Knicks are a little bit like that too. I think I actually went out to the Clipper-Knicks team and took my daughter and son-in-law out there. We all went to the Knicks game together, and it was a great experience. Actually, we got the tickets through one of the Knicks assistant coaches, which was really cool. So I couldn't wear my Clipper gear. I had my Clipper socks on and shoes, but I couldn't wear any jerseys. But I do think that it'll be interesting to see how the Knicks do in the East and how the Clippers do in the West, because I think both are dangerous teams that people don't want to see.
Absolutely. I think they're both teams that you wouldn't necessarily predict them to be the team to come out, but there's a chance. And I do agree the Clippers have maybe the most talent. It's all about the chemistry, getting things.
And you just had Brunson go down, right? And that's a big hit for you guys.
Yeah, so he's back.
He's kind of a Harden-esque type of player.
Oh, yeah, he is.
It's really interesting how, you know, you talk about these two teams and their point guard, who's really the floor general, they're very similar. Good three-point shooters, good kind of penetrator, dishing guys, you know, high assist, high points.
Yep.
Very interesting comparison between those two players.
Absolutely. Maybe they'll meet in the finals.
That'd be our dream for sure. Yeah.
All right, Matt. Thank you so much for spending time with me. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No. Hey, it's always great talking to you guys here at HNN. You guys do a great job of really keeping us informed and writing good articles, having good content like these podcasts and different videos that you post. We really appreciate you in the industry. Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you much.
I'm Devon Reed.
I'm Omari Head.
And I'm Chris Henry.
We're the hosts of the Next Gen in Lodging podcast on the Hotel News Now podcast network. It's a monthly show in which we interview a new generation of hoteliers to get their insights into a variety of disciplines and topics, from finance to food and beverage and hotel operations. Listen to us on Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of the Hotel News Now Podcast Network was recorded on March 20th, 2024 by Trevor Simpson and edited by Rachel Dobb. Look for this and more hotel industry news at hotelnewsnow.com.